Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
What we're going to do now is we're going to talk about the sensitive issue of sexual harassment in the workplace. Just like bullying, it's become exceptionally topical for the last couple of years in South Africa. And ultimately, what we want to do is try and prevent such things from happening, give people a sense of guidance in terms of how to go about preventing this kind of thing and how to handle it if it does happen in their lives. So we're going to go to Larry Dave, who's an attorney specializing in employment law. Hello, Larry.
Good evening, Saul, and good evening to your listeners.
Yes. Larry, it's good to have you on the show. Larry, this topic is probably one of the most sensitive out there. But it's something that we need to have an understanding so we know what to do in particular situations. This the areas of the law, first looking at from purely legal point of view, the specific acts and laws that are there in order to protect people in the working environment. Have they changed at all in the last sort of 5 years with regard to cases like this? Are we still in the same sort of framework era?
Saul, in March 2022, we in fact received a new set of laws, so to speak, in the form of a code of good practice on the prevention and elimination of harassment in the workplace. And that kind of encapsulates all the different types of, deals with all the different types of harassment and how it's regulated. And that's pretty recent, and that's what the current legal position is based on.
Mm. So essentially, I mean, in the workplace, you've got certain people who are responsible for different things. You've got your HR officer, you've got the employee relations officer, and then you've got the legal department. From your understanding, I mean, where does somebody start if they think something like this is happening?
Well, let me start off by saying that this is some have described sexual harassment in the workplace as an epidemic. It's pervasive, it's widespread. A lot of it goes unreported for obvious reasons. Mm. You've got the power play between your subordinate employees and their superiors. And as Michael correctly said, unemployment rate is high. People are worried that if they leave their jobs because they feel that they've been harassed or sexually harassed, they're worried that they may not find a job elsewhere. Mm. So they stick around, and they often not sure what they can do. So it is a problem, but there are provisions that assist vulnerable employees or employees who are experiencing this type of harassment. Let me say this. I think the point of departure insofar as the workplace is concerned is that employers are obliged to create safe working environments for their employees. And this includes aspects around sexual harassment. And it's typically sexual harassment is typically an abuse of that power that I mentioned. It's a violation of personal boundaries.
Yeah.
And, the people need to understand that the definition of sexual harassment is very broad. Mm. It is extremely broad, and there's different forms of sexual, it takes different forms. And I can just give you some examples because some of them are quite interesting, how broad the concept goes. You know, you can have terminology, terms of endearment, calling your colleague honey or baby in a suggestive way can be considered a form of sexual harassment. There's nonverbal clues, staring at a person's body parts in a suggestive way, making hand gestures, blowing kisses, even the so-called the wolf whistle. In fact, whistling in a particular way, the wording is included in the legislation. Whistling at another person in a suggestive way can be considered offensive. Any physical advances that are uninvited, blocking someone's path. I'm giving some real life examples. Blocking someone's path, that comes up quite a bit. Brushing up against somebody and saying that it wasn't intentional or they didn't realize that they were brushing up against the person in a suggestive way. There's comments and innuendos, comments about a person's body. Your legs look nice today. That skirt's very short. It looks good on you. These things can be offensive to people if they are new to that person or uninvited, the comments. commenting on people's appearances, sexual orientation, sex-related jokes is a big one that comes up a lot, discussing pornography, asking a person about their sex life, romantic or sexual undertones in conversations. It goes to the extreme of, you know, quid pro quo, asking for sexual favors, sending explicit material. Pornography in the workplace is huge, and it's often brushed under the carpet. You share a certain material via a platform, WhatsApp, whatever it may be, can be highly offensive to another person. And this goes on and on. The list goes on. All of this can be highly offensive to an individual, but they're too scared to report it because they fear reprisal. And, you know, and that's one of the difficulties with dealing with these cases. Look, also, the statistics are clear. I mean, this is male on female. Those are the statistics. It's seldom that you have the opposite female towards male. So the statistics are right up there with male conduct towards females, and it's the females who are the ones who are the victims of the of these offensive behavior. So what can be done? Of course, an employer who it becomes aware of this conduct through a complaint by a friend or a family member or a colleague, or the victim herself or himself. I'll just be fair to use both genders there. Then that should be reported and escalated typically to the HR department, who then needs to take steps to address the conduct. And the legislation sets out what approaches must be taken, and the victim provided an option as to whether they want to deal with this in an informal way, i.e. by sitting with the person with some kind of intervention, a therapist or a counselor, some third party to address the conduct, inform the alleged perpetrator that if you are doing this, it needs to stop, it's offensive. And there's then if the victim wants to take it more seriously, but it's more extreme offensive conduct, then they can obviously ask for a more formal approach, which would be in the form of a disciplinary action. And sexual harassment, if you're found guilty, if the perpetrator is found guilty of sexual harassment, typically that's the end of the road for the person. It's unlikely there's going to be a final written warning. It's considered to be a very, very serious workplace offense. It's right up there as a high scheduled offense. But let me say this also, there have been, although in the minority, cases of malicious complaints.
That's different
where someone lodges a complaint about being sexually harassed, but it's malicious, and there's nothing, you know, there's other reasons behind the agendas. That person can be taken to task and ultimately can lose their jobs. But that's in the minority. So obviously people are encouraged to report these things, and there are laws to protect them. There's laws outside of labor law. For example, I'll give one example, which is the Protection from Harassment Act. It's a particular piece of legislation where an employee can obtain a protection order against the perpetrator. The problem is if the perpetrator is their boss and they've got to work together, it becomes complicated. There's one other very important point that I want to make is, and this also comes up a lot, is the fact that the complainant does not indicate that the conduct is unwanted doesn't mean that there hasn't been sexual harassment. And often what happens is in WhatsApp messages, there'll be a sexually charged message to the colleague, and the colleague will be found it very awkward, not know how to respond, and doesn't want to ignore the message, and sends a smiley emoji or a laughing face. The perpetrator thinks that the conduct is okay, there's nothing wrong with it, and then continues to perpetrate the misconduct. And that's where a lot of the perpetrators get themselves into hot water, because they come back and say, but they didn't tell me that they were uncomfortable with my message. If I can put a caution out there to anyone who is sending messages, who thinks that they are not being offensive, should just apply the test. The test is, if you think it would be wrong or make someone feel uncomfortable, then don't do it.
No, it's something that you there's no two ways about it in terms of the workplace environment. You know, it's just the kind of country we live in, and in, you know, the way things are in the world at the moment. Any case of workplace sexual harassment gets you know, massive media attention. You know, gender issues are they've got a lot of fire under them at the moment. So, you know, it would be you would be, you know, greatly wisely advised to go and proceed with the most caution when dealing with your colleagues at work. You know, these things, if they happen, can get totally blown up into huge ramifications. You know, it's you know, I think people might see a situation as small, but then ultimately it can steamroll and get bigger.
Absolutely. And there are remedies. There's remedies available for victims. It's not just internally through the workplace. Obviously, if the individual is dissatisfied with the outcome, they can approach the CCMA and ultimately could go to the Labour Court. So there are those remedies, but again, and they can do that while they're employed.
Yes. So if there are things there, you know, questions in people's minds, you know, Larry is telling us exactly. You know, he's given us specific types of behavior, which just to be aware of, really. I mean, you know, some people, you know, are just aware of this naturally, and, you know, they're a naturally courteous type of behavior. But some people might be most people are not interested in harassment. And maybe they get into a situation, you know, where they don't actually understand that they are harassing somebody. There's that side of it as well. You know, I would say the law has a duty to protect, you know, all the the justice to provide for the all the parties concerned. But if you as a particular individual, you know, feel if you've got a question about this, you are welcome to send us a message on 0618951019, 0618951019. It's a sensitive topic, and we are very careful about protecting people's privacy. So don't worry about that. I think it's communication is the most important part of that of this process, because ultimately, if you're one of the parties involved. Things don't get dealt with. They might get repeated. So Larry's given us some parameters to say there are legal requirements. So Larry, would you say the first port of call, if you are, say, concerned that you might be a victim, would you firstly go to would you first talk to the employee relations officer, or where would you start? What would be the process to go through?
Yes, so for organizations that have got human resources departments or ER departments, the first point of call.
Yeah.
And to ensure that they follow up with their complaint, they need to also inform the HR function whether this must be, to what degree do they want the confidentiality maintained in all of this, because that's also very important. As you say, it's a very sensitive area.
Yeah.
And if there's a sense that HR is not acting fast enough, and that means within a day or two they should be escalating this into a process, then the person can approach somebody very senior in the business. And if there's no HR function in the smaller businesses, then to approach the CEO or the most senior person in the organization, and do that either verbally or in writing. That's the first point of call. And again, let me say this, there's one thing I didn't mention, and it's a caution to employers. That if employers, the legislation provides that if employers don't act and don't do everything practicable to address the complaint, then they can be held what we call vicariously liable, in other words, indirectly liable to the victim, ultimately by a court of law. So they also need to know that they are obliged to act swiftly and to take whatever steps necessary, obtain advice on what to do, take all steps necessary to address the misconduct, to protect themselves.
So if you're out there, if you're an employer and you are, you know, it's incumbent upon you to take certain steps with regards to this. You know, this is important information that Larry is sharing with us. I don't know if any of the listeners out there ever even knew that it was actually, you know, it's incumbent upon the employer to take action lest they be included within the sort of litigation process that may follow from such a complaint. We're going to move slowly into the next part of the show, and we're going to go to a short ad break. We'll be back in a few minutes.